Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Pan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest this morning is the founding chairman of Rice University's Department of Religious Studies, Professor Niels Nielsen. He is an expert in philosophy and religion. Niels and I will be discussing his new book titled God in the Obama Era, Presidents, Religion, and Ethics from George Washington to Barack Obama. Good morning, Professor Niels. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Good. I'm doing fine this election day. It's good to be talking with you.
Fantastic. I'm excited to have you on the air with me to talk about presidential politics and history on this midterm election day. By the way, your book is a wonderful read. It is very informative, and I strongly recommend it to everyone, especially for those who love history and politics. Let us get started by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, we can do this in a hurry. I grew up in California in the area of Los Angeles, Long Beach, California. I was out in California before the big amounts of smog came in. I attended University of Southern Cal and a new school, George Pepperdine. Then I had the wonderful experience of going to Yale in New Haven. It's a great university and the greatest school of religion and theology. I'm a little biased in the country. I had 6 years of study and 3 years of teaching. And then I had the opportunity to come to Rice University in Houston, Texas. And I just came and stayed for 40 years. I was in the philosophy department, then we developed a religious studies department. Rice is neither a church school nor a state school, one of the few in Texas at that level. And I had the privilege of teaching students of all kinds of religious backgrounds, Christian, Jewish, Roman Catholic and Protestant, along with some Muslims and Buddhists. Put in, had great liberty to write and research, and had wonderful students, some of whom I follow. Some are in teaching careers and doing very well. And every so often I'm in the street somewhere and they say, well, I remember I took your course 40 years ago, and I say, what's your name? But my book tries to reach out beyond any kind of narrow sectarian background, but to teach religion, to affirm religion very positively and very constructively.
What led you to the study of religion and philosophy in the first place?
Well, I was in a family that was Christian. I am a cradle Christian. As you grow up and raise more serious questions, then you have the opportunity to move not only into religion but into philosophy. And these things came quite naturally in my undergraduate career. And then I had the wonderful opportunity of studying at Yale, a chance to grow and learn. And that growing and learning, of course, continues into the present.
Very interesting. Well, what inspired you to write God in the Obama Era?
Yeah, that's an interesting kind of question. I was very much impressed with Jimmy Carter. Mm-hmm. And some of my friends were writing about him. I wrote a little book, The Religion of Jimmy Carter. We had a German translation and a Dutch translation. You know, Carter wasn't anybody, a farmer from Plains. He started making his profession of faith as a born-again Christian. And before he knew it, following Richard Nixon, he was in the White House. I think Carter was successful in some respects, in other respects not. I think he's a man of great integrity. And then I started collecting material on the other presidents, And it was like Topsy, it just grew.
At what point in the presidential history did religion comes into play?
I think absolutely at the beginning. George Washington, I think, was an immensely great man. Our country wouldn't have been what it was without him. He believed in God. He was not a religious fanatic. He was a balanced person. The point is not to eliminate religion from American public life. Washington, Jefferson, most of our presidents would say we don't want to do that. But it's one thing, as it's been throughout much of the world's history, that the religion of the ruler is the religion of his people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something the founding fathers managed to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Religion came from below. There was religious freedom. There was freedom from religion for those people who didn't want to affirm it. There was freedom to go beyond Christianity to other religions. But I think the wonderful gift of America to the world, I'm very serious about this, is real freedom of religion, tolerance. I was behind the Iron Curtain a number of times in the communist era. I've been to China, done much of Asia. And if you live in a country where there is not freedom of religion, well, that's a great loss. When you're practicing religion in fear, or when religion is dictated from the state. And the great thing about the United States has been that religion has flourished, but it's flourished in variety and in freedom. It's primarily theistic, you know, this is a wonderful gift from God that we don't have religion pushed on us by politicians or by rulers, but let our own conscience reign.
In reading your book, what's interesting about it is that the founding fathers used the perimeters of the Christian ethic to build a nation, but at the same time, the nation was not born out of fighting for religious freedom, because they were forming a coalition among all the different religious beliefs, in this case, fighting for economic freedom and everything else. So it's a unique thing that I think we all tend to forget.
Yeah, you know, Protestant Reformation is a very important thing. No matter whether you're Roman Catholic or Protestant, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
But as Jefferson said, rivers of blood flowed in the wake of the Reformation. Central Europe was badly damaged, nearly destroyed. And the founding fathers, people like Jefferson and Washington wrote to the Jewish community affirming certainly freedom for Jewish citizens, but men were determined that we would not have that kind of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And religion in America grew and changed over the years. People often look at the period of the Founding Fathers as a very religious one. Well, it was maybe 37% in the middle colonies. The American country religion grew all through the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
So religion has flourished in freedom. People can change their religion. They can ask questions about it. They can have their choice. And this is not the solution to all the world's problems, but it's very tragic, I think, when people fight wars over religion and persecute heretics. Freedom of religion means that finally some ideas just die out. There's a very important factor in American religion that we have to talk about. That's the frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And on the frontier, religion took a very different kind of mode than it took in the eastern colonies. The men who founded this country were aristocrats. They were Washington, Jefferson, rich people. There was not universal suffrage for religion. Religion grew on the frontier with what we call the circuit rider. Protestantism took a revivalistic form. And then in the after the Civil War, that's the time which we had large Roman Catholic immigration, large significant Jewish immigration. Religion reached out beyond the original Protestant basis to a more inclusive kind of thing. And now, of course, we have various world religions, as we say, coming into country.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dialogue between these religions. In Houston, we have a program called Meals on Wheels,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it's interfaith. And this
right.
means that religious people are taking care of old age people. There's not simply conflict. There's dialogue and there's cooperation. And this is the American way, and I think it's been successful.
You brought something up very interesting about the fact that this is something I've read in your book. Abraham Lincoln had been known to have said both the North and the South read the same Bible. And in his case, obviously, everybody's got their own spin on it. How did he use his view of the Bible to rally support for his presidency?
Yeah, well, you know, Lincoln is a very interesting person. He's, you know, one of the really great presidents that's recognized. As a young man, he was a kind of a skeptic. And we're not sure that Lincoln was ever baptized. His wife joined a church. He didn't. He was at the same time a very deeply religious man who felt terribly, felt the pain of a struggle between North and South. That Civil War over the issue of slavery and disunion was an incredibly religious conflict. Both the North and the South, Lincoln observed, regarded God as being on their side. And Lincoln, in one of his addresses, I quote in my book, said the Americans are a half-chosen people. That is, he wondered how God could be on both sides and knew that God wasn't simply, naively, on both sides. So Lincoln, I think, had what we call self-criticism. He didn't look for manifest destiny. Onward, Christian soldiers. 600,000 men died in that terrible Civil War, and Lincoln felt that very deeply. I think one of the things that's very important for our hearers is that people like George Washington and Abraham Lincoln were soon eulogized uncritically. All kinds of stories were made up about them. If you check it out in my book, I quote a man named Bollinger, and Bollinger has given us good evidence, I think. George Washington and the cherry tree, that's a myth. That's not a true story. You can check it out in my sources.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln was made a saint almost soon as he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at these people critically. I think when we look at them critically, their greatness stands out. If Lincoln had not been assassinated, he might have been able to bring Reconstruction more quickly to the country and more positively. George Washington, I regret to say some of your hearers may not like to hear it, but the evidence by Bollinger is that Valley Forge was not there for Washington as a place of prayer. He was a churchgoer. He was a man who believed that there was providential care for him personally and our country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important, I try in my book, to look at our presidents positively, but critically, for they were human beings.
Right.
Lincoln was so remarkable because he had virtually no education and a wonderful spirit of forgiveness. And, you know, he's a great man that we look to the present still.
What you have given in your book is that you have given us a wonderful breakdown for each president about how they used their beliefs, religious belief in this case. For example, Woodrow Wilson, one of the most religious presidents we had, prayed on his knees every night. And for some reason or another, he really didn't quite accomplish as much as he could. Tell us a little bit how he used his religious belief to lead America in the world arena in the beginning of the 20th century, because at that time, we are going through a turning point for the entire world.
Wilson certainly is one of the great and distinguished presidents. His father was a preacher in the South, a defender of slavery. He learned his oratory from his father. He's the only president to have earned a Ph.D. degree. He was a university president. You know, Wilson was as sure of his religion as Lincoln was hesitant. He said, well, I'm a Presbyterian and a Democrat, and nothing more needs to be said. he had this terrible situation of a world war. America was neutral, but the other side was winning. Finally, he felt obliged to carry the nation into the world war. And he regarded Christianity and democracy as virtually identical. He was probably a bit uncritical in that, although he appreciated the American democratic tradition very much. I think most historians, the majority of them, would say that if Wilson had managed to carry America into the League of Nations, we might not have had the situation we had with Hitler and the Second World War. There was terrible hatred in Europe after 4 years of a world war, a bloodbath, 20 million people killed. Old monarchies falling, the Austro-Hungarian, the German, the Russian. It was an awful mix-up, and Wilson stands out, I think, among the people who led in that war as one with moral integrity and with religious insight. Lincoln was the common sense man. Wilson was the intellectual. He was certainly deeply motivated by Christianity, but he lived in a different world than the founders of the country, and he had his own deep understanding of Christian faith. He didn't think Christian faith was magic and would solve all the problems that we have. I think history has probably proved him right, but he's a fascinating person. If you compare him with Franklin Roosevelt, both of these presidents had the problem of a world war,
right?
And both of them in time involved their country in the world war. One of the justices of the Supreme Court, we have to be careful about this, said when he met Franklin Roosevelt, first-rate disposition, second-rate mind. I think that might be too severe on Roosevelt, but he was not the scholar that Woodrow Wilson was. I think his service to America was enormous of both these presidents. Both of them believed in freedom. Roosevelt had the problem of the New Deal, of the Depression, a depression that's comparable only to what we have in the recession. It was probably worse. Quarter of the workforce out of work. I'm old enough to remember the Depression while my daddy was a merchant and how tough it was. Roosevelt had a wonderful kind of empathy with the people. I think he was sincerely religious. He was an Anglican. His personal life was, so far as his children and his marriage were concerned, not very happy. But surely he understood Christianity. He was a confirmed low church Anglican. He could talk intelligently about the Trinity. Roosevelt was. And I think, like so many of these presidents, you know, without his faith in God, without his deep commitment as an American patriot, which he certainly was, without those things, if we'd had a different kind of leader, the story would be very different. And in my book, you know, I try and say, what would happen if Wilson or Roosevelt moved into our world today?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
They'd find a lot of things that are very interesting, you know. Reliance on airplanes, Roosevelt did fly from time to time. But computers, my grandson takes for granted that computers were there at the creation of the world. And this kind of world where we're joined together very closely, so much with the rest of the world. In the 19th century, I think it's fair to say, the time of Lincoln, the United States was a country protected by two great oceans and the British Navy. America was isolated. It didn't have to face world problems. Now a president today, you know, has to face terrorism from abroad. What's going to happen in another country where there's immediate communication by television, by internet? This is a very, very different world with different kinds of issues. But I think faith in truth, faith in democracy, and faith most of all in God is very important in the kind of world a president lives in, has to deal with.
Well, all our presidents have used their faith in some way, in some form or another, to push the agenda. For example, let's talk about the Reagan presidency. He uses it as being God is on the side of good. And, of course, his era brought us to a world new order in the sense of ending the Cold War, for example. And, of course, the other flip side of the situation here, within the most recent times, you had mentioned about the advancement in technology and so forth. I think the flip side of the advancement of technology allows us to be in a situation where timeline in the history of the presidency of the United States, where the president himself now becomes an openly public moral compass for the office as well as the nation. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I think beginning at the outset, Washington had a wonderful moral compass. Mm-hmm. And I think it was true of the founding fathers. Mm-hmm. They were people who believed in God, but they did not want to found an established religion. They wanted religious freedom. Mm-hmm. But Washington believed very deeply in Providence. If we'd had a man like Napoleon rather than Washington, this would be a very different story in mm-hmm. our country as it is. And I think when we talk about Thomas Jefferson, he made a courageous and remarkable fight along with Madison for religious freedom, for religious tolerance. You know, I think there's real moral sense that was rooted in religion but expressed itself more generally at these times. I think when you come to Roosevelt and then to Truman, the United States found itself in a very different kind of situation. It was confronted by atheistic communism. No one can deny that. And I think faith in God was a great factor in the Cold War. You know, Roosevelt picked his successor, Harry Truman. He didn't know him very well. Harry was quite a remarkable man. His father had gone broke. He couldn't go to college. But he had courage and faith in God and, you know, made good decisions, very tough decisions. I think one of his best decisions was not to invade China, to let the Chinese work out their own problems. It would have been mm-hmm. a terrible bloodbath if we'd gone in there.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Truman was a Mason and a Baptist. George Washington was a Mason. Truman's, you know, a remarkable kind of figure. We can compare him with Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon. And these were the people, I think, that most historians would say, you'd want to nuance the answer to this, but Nixon was as much of a moral failure as any man in the presidency. And the tragedy of Richard Nixon was he was Quaker by background. He was a friend of Billy Graham. But he probably one of the most intelligent presidents that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Nixon surely gets great points for his opening to China, his establishing relationships. Nixon did a lot of great things. But finally he turned cynic. Finally he lost his faith in morality and, you know, the destiny of the nation. And Nixon, I think, is a really genuinely tragic figure. As for good old LBJ, you know, I've seen four of the presidents alive, and LBJ was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good Texas politician. His parents were Baptist. He joined the Disciples of Christ. LBJ was a master politician in the Senate. He had a religious sense. You know, we could debate this. The historians debate it. But I think the majority of historians would say he blundered into Vietnam. That was a mistake. He did it on his own. LBJ is a great president, but a tarnished president. And but that he believed in God, yeah, sure. Lyndon Johnson's kind of God. Lincoln had a much deeper sense of humility.
Well, I think President Clinton has his belief in his own God, too. And so that the Bushes, so that brings us up to President Obama, who had kind of set his new framework for America.
So far as Obama's concerned, I think we're too close to things
yeah.
to make a final judgment. But he is a very interesting man as our first Afro-American president.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly an idealist. And certainly with terrible problems on his hands, the war in the Middle East, he didn't choose that. The recession, he didn't choose that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, after he started to run for president and after he got to office, he found himself with a whole bunch of problems that he probably, he certainly didn't anticipate when he ran for office in their fullness.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like about what President Obama said is that this is his philosophy as when he came into office, proclaiming that he is neither traditional liberal or conservative. And what's interesting about this is that ultimately in all the presidents that we have, whether they're to the right or to the left, it doesn't matter because pre-election you have to go to the right or you have to go to the left. But ultimately,
yeah, Obama says he doesn't like this. What he says is a simple distinction between liberal and conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I'd stick out my neck. We want to talk a little bit about Reagan, though.
Yeah.
But I think Obama, the head of the History Department at Harvard has just published a book on Obama, Mm-hmm. I haven't read it. It's going to be out tomorrow. But he's become more conservative in some respects, at least, since he's president. Mm-hmm. When you get power, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or something else, then, you know, you become a little more, much more careful.
Right.
Obama has with him all the time the keys to declaring war and declaring atomic war. And there's a man, Gary Wills. He's a Roman Catholic, an excellent commentator and historian at Northwestern University. And he points out that American presidents since Harry Truman have declared war. That is, Gary Wills' thesis is that, you know, when Woodrow Wilson declared war, Roosevelt declared war, presidents didn't declare it. In fact, they asked Congress.
Right.
When Truman had to make the decision about Korea, he made it on his own. And this has been true of presidents ever since. Now, Wills raises the question, mm-hmm. and it's relevant to what we've had in the news the last few days.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose the word comes to the president that an atomic attack has been launched on his country, and he has 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour or an hour to decide about war or peace. Now, that's a tremendous kind of responsibility. And any president that in his right mind, whether he's a saint or a rascal, will think long about that. That's the danger of the kind of world in which we live. And, you know, that ends in a little bit of humility. Presidents there have been who want to play God and change the world and think they can make it all over. But we have this wonderful power of atomic and hydrogen energy. It can end poverty in the world, all kinds of wonderful things it can do. And here we are in our time with the real threat of destruction of two potential bombs coming to this country, probably as a probe. That's enough, I think, to make American president say his prayers. And Obama says he says his prayers.
Well, in his situation, too, obviously he came into office with one sense of philosophical ideology about what he wants to do. And he has never hit from that concept. Now, how does his philosophical differences compare to his predecessors, and how does that energize the far right and the far left? Because it seems like now religion is becoming the foreground of politics, because we are no longer governing the country from the spirit of the law or spirit of religion in terms of tolerance and everything else. It's now to a point where we need to be one way or the other. And so he's challenged from that perspective. And what's very interesting now, I can see on the things that he's done, certainly within the last year or so, 6 months, or within the last several months or so, he's coming closer to being a little bit more conservative in his way of thinking, because realizing that, well, the whole world does not really share the idea of open door policy. And I'm using this term loosely in the sense that accept you for who you are, because you do have people out there that if you're not me, you don't need to be on this earth. And that changes the dynamics a little bit, you see.
I think there's a very interesting factor in Obama. And the polls show that as high as 40% of public opinion
mm-hmm.
has the mistaken notion, very mistaken notion, that he's a Muslim.
Right.
He's not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He was baptized in United Church of Christ in Chicago. He's made his profession of Christian faith. He talks about grace and salvation. He says he prays all the time. Now, I don't think that just because he professes Christian faith, that's going to solve all his problems or even make him a good president.
Mm-hmm.
That I think we're going to have to look to judgment on. But I think humility is very important. Lincoln certainly had humility. He looked to God to, you know, to bring an end to that hideous war.
Mm-hmm.
I think Obama, more than any other president we've had, knows something about world religions. And I think that those of us who are Christians and those of other background, Jewish or Eastern religions, when I started teaching, I didn't know much about world religions. I hadn't studied them much at Yale. And then I had students that were Muslim or Hindu in background, as well as Jewish and Roman Catholic and Protestant students of a whole variety. There's a fascinating kind of religious mix in America. And it's true that Obama, you know, makes him, it doesn't justify him, but his mother was a skeptic. She was a secular anthropologist. She introduced him to the world's religions. She took him to church in Hawaii. I've seen that church. I've attended that church that she took him to on Christmas. She took him to Borobudur, which was a wonderful Buddhist site in Indonesia. She was married to rather cynical and skeptical Muslims in her two marriages. But she came to religion from the outside. Obama made his confession of religious faith in Chicago. I don't see any reason but to think that it was sincere and honest. He had a problem with his minister. We all know about the Wright affair. But certainly Obama, I think if I would defend this, I defend it in my book. I think when George Bush carried us into the war in Iraq, there's a good chance he didn't know the difference between a Shiite and a Sunni. Those are the branches of Muslims that are still fighting each other there and still working so hard against peace in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Obama is more knowledgeable about these things. He's invited Muslims to the White House. He's helped celebrate the Jewish holidays. This is a very knowledgeable man about these things. And I don't think, as Christians, I talk into Christians, I understand I may have some non-Christian or non-believing hearers, but we're not justified in living in a world in which there are as many Muslims as there are Christians, as many Roman Catholics as there are Protestants, without understanding something about world religions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not to say that we're going to move into something else other than Christianity or our own denomination. Same can be said of the other side. But as the Cordova mosque controversy, mm-hmm. whether there will be a mosque on the site of 9/11, that's, you know, just going back and forth in our country. And the whole question of religious pluralism is out there. I think you have to say it very bluntly. There are militant Muslims. There are Muslim fanatics that want to destroy the world. There are also Christians and Jewish people who take a pretty good shot at introducing us into war. Religious tolerance is very important. Washington knew it when he wrote the Jewish community in Rhode Island and saying how glad we are for freedom of worship for you. John Adams wrote the Muslims and said this is not a Christian country. This is a country with freedom of religion, with Christians in it. And certainly from my point of view, we want freedom to make our Christian witness. Christianity is very important for this country, for our civilization, and for the world. But not if it's imposed on us Constantine time with a sword. And we have to learn to live with our Muslims. Muslim and Jewish friends. The Jewish friends have a terrible legacy of the Holocaust, terrible persecution there. And we're out in the world now, and the Muslims are on the TV, and all the world watches us. I think it's an interesting time. I think it's a very exciting time. I don't see why, what goes on in our time, one would be inclined less to believe in God. I'm inclined more to believe in God, but that's freedom. But, you know, this is a dangerous time, and when Obama says he prays, I hope he does. I pray for him from time to time that he keep his sanity in this world. Let's talk a little bit about Reagan, may we?
Sure. Yes, go ahead.
Reagan's such a fascinating kind of man. I grew up in California. He was operating out of California. He followed Jimmy Carter, and he beat Jimmy Carter and was elected to two terms. Mm-hmm. Now, if I refer to my book, I don't know how successful Reagan was in the economy of the country. If you want to criticize Reagan, I can cite the commentary from my book, James Baker, a lawyer from Houston, and my nephew, Lynn Nofziger, were among the people that ran the country. They say he got a little sleepy at cabinet meetings. They're a number of negative things that can be said about Reagan, but I think Reagan goes down as one of the really great presidents in American history, and for this reason. Mm-hmm. He saw what was going on in Russia. He saw that the Cold War was up for grabs, and he did the wonderful thing of making friendship with Gorbachev. And I don't know whether Jimmy Carter, as much as I admire Jimmy Carter, could have done it.
Right.
Reagan was the man that said, tear down the wall, Mr. Gorbachev. But he made friendship, and the Cold War came to an end in Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I think one should be everlastingly grateful. He was, his mother was a very pious person. His father was a drunkard. And Reagan's pastor, we have the record of it. He spent hours on his knees as president. The record is very clear, singing and praying. Reagan was a Christian. You can almost say a very simple Christian. But he was a tricky man, because you say he's simple and he's quite profound. There's no Reagan behind the Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no second Reagan. The Bushes couldn't duplicate him. But, you know, I think there are nasty things said about Reagan. He's a simpleton. Well, he was no simpleton in War and Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a simple Christian, but his belief in God, you know, strengthened his Americanism, you know. It was not naive patriotism.
Very, very true about him. Coming back to Obama, is there any things in his framework, in his thinking, in terms of his ideology that mirrors his predecessors?
Well, the country, the magazines are full of how Obama has changed since he came to Washington. I think, you know, when you campaign, and well, be careful how I say it, don't be misunderstood, but the Republicans that are campaigning are promising all kinds of things these days, too. That's what politicians do when they run for office. And then the question is, do you have the integrity and the insight to govern, and how well can you govern? I think he's had an awful batch of problems on his desk. You know, I think it's up for grabs. As I say in my book, this is the Obama era. We have to live with him for two more years. He's our president. We ought to, you know, pray for the United States of America and its president. We do have the great and wonderful opportunity to make changes in elections. I think one can say very carefully, not be misunderstood, the Founding Fathers were conservative people. They were conservative in what sense? Well, they didn't have a popular election for president. They had an electoral college.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the Constitution makes it much harder than in a European parliamentary government to change anything in this country. The Constitution's, in this sense, a conservative document.
Mm-hmm.
And they were terribly shrewd people, the Founding Fathers. We won that war with the British because Benjamin Franklin and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson went to Europe and got the support of the French.
Mm-hmm.
French Navy bottled up the British fleet, and the British couldn't win in America. That was American diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at Obama, you have to say Obama has terrible problems of diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
There is no easy answer. He asked the Chinese to join him in an attempt to control global warming, and the Chinese turned him down bluntly in Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries, as George Bush has tried, as Jimmy Carter tried, to get some peace in the Israel-Arab dispute. These are very difficult problems, and just because we get a change of parties, I read in the paper already, don't want to stick out my neck on it, but when the Republicans get to governing, as they will to a certain extent after today's election, then you have terrible responsibilities and conflicting kinds of parties. We have had a very stable form of government in this kind of democracy, and that's to its credit. We have put religious values very deeply in our country, but in a spirit of tolerance and pluralism. And, you know, I think the success of the American nation has been great and wonderful. I'm quite prepared to say it's been providential. Washington thought that God protected him in battle, and one of his proofs for the existence of God was the emergence of the American Republic. Lincoln was more careful about it because he had that terrible destruction, the terrible war between North and South. If belief in God teaches us anything, I think it ought to teach us what Lincoln said. It's important not that God is on our side, but that we are doing his will in humility and in justice. You know, this is not an easy responsibility.
It's very true. The balance of power has always worked for us since the beginning of this country. However, within the last several decades, the balance of power seems to have not worked. Rather, it sort of hampered the progress of the country, don't you think? Because you get into this jam where one side does not want to give or work with the other side. In the spirit, they talk about working with one another, and in essence, they're not. So what can the president do in terms of setting the agenda? Because his hands are pretty much tied. I mean, there's not a whole lot he can do.
Well, you know, I think the service of religion is to serve the kingdom of God. I look to my religion when I say my prayers for my destiny in this life and in the next life. And I would say, you know, religion is in the background of politics, period.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at something like communism in Russia, well, they said they're going to get rid of all religion.
Mm-hmm.
Communism turned into a pseudo-religion with its own
right.
holidays and its own kind of worship.
Sure.
Politics is a different kind of game. It's a power game. The problem is not whether presidents will have power. Of course presidents have power, and that means power to enforce the law, to go to war. The kingdom of God is something else. It operates by love and forgiveness and not by power. I think the problem a president has is how to use power in a moral kind of way. I repeat, I think it's not wrong to have power, but power can use terribly, terribly important in this world. One can hardly overstate it. Who has the power?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we had the Holocaust in Germany, I'm careful my language, but the hellish Nazis had the power, and they massacred millions of Jews.
Mm-hmm.
It's terribly important in this country, not just that presidents have good intentions, but that they are effective. So I think Christians ought to be actively involved in the struggle for peace and the struggle to eliminate poverty. But we don't need naive utopian kind of thing that says, if you elect me president of the United States, I'll solve all the world's problems. I think Christianity and any mature religion, the kingdom of God, then we will not need power and force. But it matters very much in a place like China whether the man who is now in prison and has received the Peace Prize is allowed to express his convictions and strengthen his country. It's very tragic when he doesn't strengthen his country. And I'd remind our hearers there's somewhere between 50 million and 100 million Christians in China.
Mm-hmm.
And they face a different situation than we do.
Mm-hmm.
How can we support our government? How can we work for world peace?
Mm-hmm.
These are not one thing we get in religion. We get family problems. If we're clergy, family problems are not easily solved. And we don't need any utopia. We don't need anything that says, if you just put me in office, I'll do the magic. We need prayer and humility. And if I don't want to talk politics the wrong way, but if a Democratic president is replaced by a Republican president or vice versa, and I think the back and forth is a healthy back and forth, has been in America, then we need someone of real competence. And,
what kind of
prayer is relevant? We have had presidents that have been great failures, Nixon and Clinton, certainly in his personal life, LBJ. I think we want a country under God. Romans 13 is a very difficult passage in Paul's letters. Let every soul be subject to the powers to be ordained of God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sieg Heil, was Herr Hitler ordained of God? No, I think he should have been killed by his opponents.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we have a responsibility as religious people, whatever we are. Jewish, Roman Catholic, Protestant, I will include the Muslims. There are certainly Muslims in this country who are wonderful citizens, and we need them. And there are others, like some Christians, that need to be watched by the police. But I think it's wrong for Christians to withdraw and say, this is all for heaven, we're not involved.
Mm-hmm.
I think Christians have, religious people, period, have a responsibility to be critical, where do we go in this present situation? I don't think we need more people that just get excited. Jesus would say, you know, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. But
well,
don't
Professor,
be uncritical in giving what Caesar deserves. I need a policeman on my blog.
Professor, where can someone buy your book and get more information about you and
my
your
book is on my website. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. I've said a lot of things in generalization here. This is documented in my book. My website is God in the Obama Era. And you can get it on the Internet or under my name, Nielsen. And I'd be grateful if we'd manage to do some dialogue and that your readers would find some things to disagree with and argue about in my book, and we could learn together in a friendly kind of way.
It's a wonderful book. I strongly recommend it to everyone. It's a wonderful read. We're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, this is only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for God will last.
Very interesting. Professor Niles, thank you for that great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. I do have one question left for you. What kind of lasting impact will President Obama's religious and ethical beliefs have on our nation and our world?
Well, I think it's, I'm not trying to avoid the question, it's mixed. I think he's an idealist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a phony.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a big personality man like Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
He has sought advice, and I pray God that his next 2 years will increase peace in the world, will increase positive understanding. I think he says his prayers with sincerity.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a very smart and intelligent man. Presidents always have the problem of fate, and
mm-hmm.
we don't know what problems will come to our country. He doesn't know what problems will come to our country. And I want to pray for rulers. Paul enjoins us to.
I
don't think we'll solve all our problems just by getting rid of him. But
I understand that. Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think some realism here. Americans get some utopianism. Last word, I think the Republicans are over-promising now. They won't like to hear that. I think the Democrats have over-promised. This is a country in which religious insight, Christian faith, Jewish faith, you know, we wouldn't be this kind of country that we are without faith in God.
Right.
And it's terribly important. But then God is my judge, and I don't just tutor him. It's been great to speak with you.
Thank you very much for your wonderful insights and a wonderful history lessons for all of us. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, sir. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest is Tiana Ho. She's a nutritional skincare specialist and a world-leading expert in human skincare and color. Her book, Eat Your Way to Lighter Skin, was honored with 7 book awards. Dr. Tiana and I will be talking about her latest book, Cooking on the Light Side, which is a companion volume to Eat Your Way to Lighter Skin. She will also be sharing some of her secrets in being possibly the strongest woman in the world, pound for pound. Thank you again and have a great day.